Hello, and I have been asked to present on behalf of Dairy NZ a summary of water quality state and trend, a comment on the suitability of the proposed buffer widths, and comment on the physiographic risk management approach. All this evidence is in my primary submission. I've just summarised it in condenser. With respect to water quality, in the absence of community-defined values or outcomes, my summary of state of current water quality was made in the context of the National Objectives Framework, National Bottom Lines, for nitrate and ammonia toxicity, secondary contact recreation and periphyton. I've also considered macro invertebrates, and this information is summarised in my primary evidence. I've also summarised trend analysis which is also summarised in my primary evidence. Based on both the state and trend information, there are some pollution hotspots with respect to current state, as represented in particular by periphyton, secondary contact recreation and macro invertebrates. With respect to trends, at a regional scale, the majority of parameters that were measured were either dominated by indeterminate or decreasing trends. The only exception to this was nitrogen, where there was a high proportion of sites that were increasing, particularly for the longer period. This information suggests that while there are some hotspots, there is not a pattern of wide-scale and ongoing water quality degradation across the whole Southland region. With respect to buffer widths, I support the intent of requiring riparian buffers to reduce the amount of sediment loss from farmland. And I believe this is important because research is indicating that fine sediment is likely to be quite a key stressor for ecosystem health. However, I do have concerns about the proposed widths. The proposed buffer widths are linear. However, guidance has indicated that linear buffer widths are only effective where there is sheet wash across the land. And this is less but the linear buffer widths are less effective when flow converges into runoff channels. And it's my concern that the focus on linear buffer widths will be at the expense of managing areas where flow convergence does occur and more sediment is likely to be lost. I'm further concerned that while the scientific evidence suggests that buffers of 5 to 10 metres will have a positive outcome, 20 metre buffers are no more effective than a 10 metre buffer, and under the condition that they're only going to be effective under sheet wash across the landscape. And finally, with respect to physiographic zones, at the conceptual level, I believe that the use of physiographic zone approach is good for identifying environmental risk and applying appropriate good management practices, as well as working as a drafting gate for the consenting process. However, this approach has not quantified the magnitude of that risk, the amount of contaminant leaving the different zones, how those zones interact together and how the contaminants build up, and what impact that will have on the downstream receiving environment. Therefore, in my opinion, this issue will need to be resolved before the physiographic zones could potentially be used to underpin the limit setting process moving forward. And I did have some stuff about Appendix E, but I take note of your last comment, Mr. Chairman, so I won't bother going over that.
Okay, thanks very much for that. I see if we have questions for you, Lord. Start at your end.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one on buffer woods. Are you actually talking about two different things here? I understand the buffer width as far as sheep, I think you call it sheep, for linear buffers.
Yep.
But the other example you give there, is that not a critical source area that would be managed differently?
Yes, it is. I, in that instance, I am referring to critical source areas, and I would hope that there is scope for farmers to manage those. Just at the moment, I'm concerned that an overall focus on a linear buffer width could potentially be at the expense of farmers concentrating in those critical source areas where there is a risk. And I think the P21 research work at Telford with the winter grazing and leaving that bottom wedge last has demonstrated that there can be quite a lot of sediment lost from those parts of the landscape.
So my interpretation is that the critical source areas in the plan are actually identified and are asked to be worked around by farmers, but your own literature, even the information you've given us as background, actually identifies and has actually given people guidance on how to deal with that, even to the point of possibly not eating it or not even putting it into crop for a start.
Yep.
And just as a note, I found in your information very helpful, right down to the handwritten farm map scale of the paddock with the lane. I thought that was very helpful. It was very beneficial to see that in picture form, because words are words, but in pictures it brings it all together.
Yep.
So I'm really suggesting that to deal with the issue you've raised here, there was actually two concepts, and they both work side by side. The big thing is, I think what you're pointing out is for a farmer to understand the differences between the two, therefore the management will be different for the two.
Agreed, yep. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, two questions, thank you, Chair. You made the comment there's no noticeable difference in a buffer zone between 10 and 20 metres. Have you got some scientific or expert evidence around the modelling of that we might be directed to?
Yes, I do. I'm not sure if you have it in front of you, but I'm referring to a memo that was written by an Environment Southland scientist to I'm assuming a planner, Claire Jordan, in December last year about cultivation setback distances. And I found that on the website.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm specifically referring to Table 1.
Thank you for that. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And my second question is a bit of clarification in your recirculated evidence on physiographic zones, and I note that you've referred to them again in today's presentation, but you use the word drafting gate.
Yeah.
And take on board the comments you made with regard to accuracy and knowledge we have about physiographic zones, but I just need a bit of clarification about what you mean by the drafting gate approach.
Yeah, so my understanding of the rule framework, and this might have been more appropriate prior to the Section 42A report, was that different zones, if they were more at risk, for example, Ongatara and Peat had a lower wintering threshold. Yeah. So my interpretation was based on the risks of a particular unit,
yeah,
if a farmer had to go for a consent, they might have a different threshold to cross based on the inherent risk in that zone. So that's what I mean by drafting gate.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about conversion potential?
Again, yeah, just different hurdles. Yeah, different hurdles for farmers to cross.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Jim.
Good afternoon. Just on the pamphlet provided on, called, I think it's Wintering On.
Yep.
On page 5 in your diagram of the of an example of good practice.
Yep.
Just wondering, with a self-feeding, self-feeders would be of benefit in a Southland situation, putting baleage in the self-feeders. Had you thought about that?
Can I defer that question to my co-worker?
Sure.
Yes, certainly, even from an economic perspective for the farmer, the self-feed ring is certainly beneficial, and probably as far as environmentally, the issue is just going to be baleage left in the paddock, which will rot. It probably doesn't have a great environmental impact, but it's probably a profitability impact for the farmer, having those rings there.
And impact on them? Paddock pugging or sediment?
Well, probably not around pugging, or sediment, but you may get cows milling around that, which you would with a feeder as well. So you actually might get less pugging because they'll be standing on top of it instead of eating it. So yeah.
So it could be a useful addition to this.
It's from a farm systems perspective, it's a useful addition, and most people would actually use a ring feeder because of the cost. You lose up to 25% of your or higher of your feed if you don't put a ring feeder around it.
Thank you. Back to Mr. Kiddo's evidence, and just find it on 6.4. Talking about or 6.5, the uncertainty around what is driving the apparent stabilisation of increasing entries at a global scale in Southland, was there any thought that around reduced cow numbers and production occurring with the downturn, would that have any correlation?
Yeah, so my understanding is that dairy conversions have slowed down in Southland and potentially plateaued. That is a potential explanation to that. If we assume that the reason for the increasing trend was dairy farming conversions and increasing numbers of dairy cows. However, I do also caution that by it just could be an artifact of a shorter time period, and therefore there's a bit more scatter, or we need longer periods of time to pick up a trend.
Thank you.
Mm. Thank you. That was one of my questions, but I do have another one. I do have another one about the bufferwoods.
Yep.
Which we'll talk about a bit, but I wanted to ask a more specific question about a reference. We've got a reference that was provided to us by Roger Hodgson, one of the staff members here, and it's a review of vegetated buffers by Zhang et al. In the Journal of Environmental Quality. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
In that, it's got a table, table 4, which shows sediment removal efficiencies with different buffer widths. And this research, I understand, is based on a whole lot of other research. It's a summary of a lot of stuff, not necessarily in New Zealand, but elsewhere as well. And I'm getting to my question. If you've had a look at that table 4 shows that there was quite a big difference between 5 and 20 metres buffers for sediment, phosphorus, even nitrogen. Quite big percentage, sort of 10 or 20% or that sort of range. So have you got a comment on the validity of that and the relevance of that for the New Zealand situation?
Yep. Thank you. So Mr. Hodgson has taken that work that you just referred to and taken the formula that was written up by those authors and applied it to this memo that I referred to previously. And there's definitely a difference between a 5 metre buffer and a 20 metre buffer. But as an example, and with the application of this formula, going from a 5 metre buffer to a 10 metre buffer, for all the slope angles considered, there's a 10% improvement of efficiency. Mm-hmm. However, for a 10 to 20, you've doubled the buffer width, and there's only a 1 to 2% increase in efficiency, so it has tapered off and plateaued. So for such a big increase in buffer width, there hasn't been a corresponding increase in efficiency gained.
Can you comment on the table 4 in relation to that?
I don't have the journal article in front of me, so I have to go back and review it if that's appropriate.
Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, anything that helps us is good.
Yep. So just to confirm, you want me to go back and look at table 4 from that journal article and comment on the removal efficiencies?
Yeah. In relation to buffer widths, particularly the difference between 5 metres and 20 metres, or whatever you think is appropriate.
Yeah, I will. Just one final point is there is a difference between a 5 and a 20, but there's less of a difference between a 10. Well, there's virtually no difference between a 10 and a 20.
Yeah.
But I'll go and review that.
That's all. Thanks.
Could I just one question from me? And you're pre-circulated evidence at paragraph 9.2. You suggest that the Appendix E standards be modified to reflect total biomass, and I understand the reason for that you suggest there is because the Environment Southland's monitoring program doesn't allow that to be measured the way that it appears in the standards currently. I see that as quite a different issue from aligning with the NOF, so I'm happy to explore this potential change.
Yep.
Do you have suggested wording? And if not, can you think about some and come back to us?
Yep. So at the moment, from recollection, that the existing water plan refers to filamentous algae, diatoms and cyanobacteria. Mm-hmm. NOF just looks at total biomass, and Environment Southland just collects total biomass.
Yeah.
So my suggested wording would be the removal of filamentous algae, diatoms and cyanobacteria. Sorry, cyanobacteria is a separate issue again. So remove filamentous algae and diatoms and replace it with total biomass.
To help us then, can you just look at Appendix E, find an example of the wording you'd recommend that we change and provide us with the changed wording?
Yep.
And sort of strike out an underline?
Yep.
Sure. So we don't try and do a scientific thing ourselves and get it wrong?
Yep.
And other than that, I don't know if the questions about foundry evidence, very helpful, thank you.
Thank you.